Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... Yeah, the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, first half, we have a catch up on what we were doing on vacation. I was cleaning and I was racing. So we'll tell you about the trials and the tribulations of all that. Gina and Bald as well. And first, I'll tell you about JB Weld DIY projects. Want to get through a few of those bad boys? Might I suggest JB Weld? You can avoid paying the repairman. You can avoid the guy showing up at your house with big dirty boots on. Big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's got the word ordinary in it. You don't want that. You want better than ordinary. You want JB Weld, or a proud sponsor of the show. They've been great. I know the owner. I know the company. I met these guys at SEMA, which got canceled this year, but JB Weld's still going strong. Been around for over 50 years, and it's proudly, the products are proudly made in the USA. That should mean more than ever these days. JB Weld it, man. Keep it in your toolbox, your kitchen drawer, your craft room. And it's available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. JB Weld.
Hey, hey, hey. This is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls. And guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have, it's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Rob Schneider. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, back from his second favorite Sega, Laguna Seca. And if you know the first, you watch too much porn. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but I got a mandate. You get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We rely on you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Balak!
Yeah, Rob Schneider's going to be zooming in soon. We'll get you guys caught up on vacation week. I had my vacation weeks have a lot of range because the beginning part of them is me cleaning this shop. That's the beginning part is literally all the stuff I can't get to. So what might feel like a vacation week is like an extra crappy cleaning week for
me. You owe it to yourself.
I do.
Yeah, maxing and relaxing.
You know, the thing about cleaning I've found, as certainly as it pertains to the shop, but even my bathroom, everyone always goes, let someone else do it. Let someone else do it. And it's like, well, okay, except for it just doesn't work out that well.
Mm-hmm. What's the track record on that?
There's still cobwebs everywhere by the front door. It doesn't, you can't express to somebody, here's what I really need you to do. Plus, there's a whole organization part. There's boxes.
Does it bother you? Like unloading the dishwasher, for example. It'll never be quite the way you want it to be. That's a bad example because I don't think you use the dishwasher. No. But you know what I mean. There's like something you're like, I appreciate the effort very much, but this is not how I would do it.
Yes. And or when somebody, what I've found is people don't really clean and organize. They just move stuff aside and sort of pile it into a drawer. And then that's when you get the chapstick with the AA batteries. And now you're effed because I've found that almost everyone works off of shapes, not off of function. So the chapstick will end up with the AA batteries because they're the same size. Obviously, one has nothing to do with the other, but at some point during the organization process, that's what happens. Anyway, I came over here with the intern Ryan, and we just cleaned. That's all we did was, he was scrubbing, and I was organizing, and that's what we did for the first 3 days. I was also prepping my car and the trailer and everything to get out to Laguna Seca. The Laguna Seca, they canceled the Monterey weekend, the big car weekend. They had this sort of driver's appreciation race that took place the week before. I'm not sure what they were doing, but it was basically no crowd, no vendors, no all the hoopla that normally attends this thing. Maybe 100,000 people with tons of vendors and, you know, Rolex sponsored drivers tents and all kinds of food and all kinds of whatever pavilion. It's all gone. It's just dudes in their race cars and their semi trucks and their trailers. And it's the hardest core of all the hardcore dudes because it's all the dudes who they went, we're not going to do this car weekend. There's not going to be any Pebble Beach concourse. There's not going to be any Quail Lodge, all the auctions, all the fun stuff for the wives and the stuff you can do at night and the Acura party. And, you know, you could go hang out at the Rolls Royce booth, you know, on Pebble Beach. All gone. Only racing. That's sure.
It was you guys in Sturgis. That's about it.
Right. So all the guys that were there, I knew were the hardcore dudes. And they had about, they got off about 8 run groups, and there's 20, 25 cars in almost each run group. So it was a pretty well-populated event, and everyone just did their thing. Best dudes in the world, completely unaffected by whatever's going on in the world as it pertains to COVID-19. And all just like crazy can-do guys who are just like, we'll just fix the car overnight. We'll pull parts off of this car and put it on that car. I saw Jim Farley. Jim Farley is Chris Farley's cousin. They look exactly the same. They're about the same age, or would be about the same age. He just got made CEO of Ford. I mean, he literally
muzzle.
Yeah. And he's out there racing his Ford powered Cobra. He's got a Shelby Cobra and he's out there racing.
He's walking the walk.
He is walking the walk, man. So we hung out a little with those guys. And the race was the race was Saturday and Sunday, 2 races Saturday, 2 races Sunday. Of course, we all made the deal to go out and eat and go to the steak places and do all that. Everything was just shoved out into the parking lot, which is fine. It's all kind of theater, like, you know, walking down the bike path and Cannery Row, and there's all these signs that like $100 fine if you don't. And it's just the sun is shining and people are going for walks and jogs and bike rides and whatever. There's no, I don't know, it seems like a lot of theater to me. Anyway, everyone just moved out to the parking lot, and except for Clint Eastwood's restaurant, which has a big beautiful patio that overlooks the bay and the ocean and all that kind of stuff. So we went out. We had some fine dining and went for big long walks in the morning, and then went to the track. It was kind of nice. The track is normally a clusterfuck, like cars way down the hill, check-in, security, can't go here, can't get in there. It's all, it is a clusterfuck normally because there's 100,000 people and all these vendors and all these checkpoints and everything just wide open. They checked your forehead with the thermometer when you walked in every morning, and that was it. Just be able to pull the car right up to the race car and get out and park it there. Like the kind of stuff you couldn't really do if it
was. Silver lining.
Yeah. So it was kind of cool. Everyone just kind of slowed down, got into the racing, got into sort of slowed it down, hung out more, did a little less rushing from one event to the next event, and enjoyed ourselves. And the racing is the racing was good, and it is completely liberating. You do not think of anything other than racing when you're racing, which is something I think we all need these days. I had an issue with my air filter, which screwed up my entire session on Saturday and then my entire session on Saturday night as well.
No.
Then when we finally got everything fixed and the car ran, I went out on Sunday morning and the transmission has a spot in it where your speedometer cable used to screw into. It's an old transmission. So the speedometer cables would run off of the transmission, and back in the old days, that's how they figured out how, you know, your speed. This has a hole in it where the speedometer cable used to go, but there's no speedometer, so it's plugged. That plug blew out somewhere around lap five. And
what are the chances?
And you prepped this car like a mofo. How? I mean, I guess you just can't know what you don't know at the time.
You're supposed to shake these things out, and I didn't. And this thing just blew, and this transmission fluid oil went all over the hot exhaust pipe and created a huge plume of smoke. So it
cinematic.
Yes, it looked as if I blew something up. I didn't know what it was, but that was the Saturday morning run session. So every one of my sessions had been screwed up, and this was just left Sunday afternoon. That was Sunday morning. And all we had was the last run of the entire day on
Sunday.
There
were three in all, right, over the weekend?
There were four. There were two Saturday, two Sunday. All of them had been marred and hampered.
Oh, man.
So worst law firm ever. Mar and hamper. We'll fight for you.
Yeah. We're dealing harassment suits.
That's right.
Don't expect much.
Believe me, we know harassment. We both took a lot of shit in junior high. So now it comes to the very last race on Sunday, and I got everything straightened out, but I've not driven this car. It's a brand new car with this stupid transmission that's like second gear and third gear are like the same gear. I don't want to bore all you guys, but I hate this transmission. So does everybody else. No one runs it. I don't know why it's in the car. But it came down to the final race, and I had not qualified for anything because I had not laid down a time. And then these guys, which I love these guys. The guy who was on the pole, Troy, who's super fast and basically a professional driver, he said, why don't we take the top five guys and put them in the back? Let's take the top five guys who gritted up, you know, qualified first, second, third, you know, through fifth, and we'll start at the back, and that's the way we're going to run this race. And it's like, that's fun for them. It's not that fun when you're driving and five dudes who are hard-charging dudes are coming. They're all going for it, because the reason they're all going for it is you could say, well, why not just let a couple laps go by and you'll work your way past these other 15 or 20 dudes? That's fine. But if one fast guy makes it out clean and gets out front everybody, and the other four fast guys are kind of hanging around, that guy's just going to take off. And he's going to leave all these other guys. Conversely, if like the fourth or fifth fastest guy could somehow scoot through the traffic and hop to the front while the fast guy was caught mm-hmm. behind a couple of guys, he could then make up a little space. So,
and that's got to look like Fury Road in your rear view. I don't like that.
I'll find some footage of it, but I'll just let you guys hear the first 30 seconds of the start. So I'm driving a 510 Datsun that I've never driven before.
It's a really little one.
It's really little. Yeah. And you can hear the second, third gear sound the same. I'll play it for you. Like, there he goes, right, real, all the way around. But everyone's just kind of in a big clump of cars together.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, the car worked good once we got it running. I just never drove it before, so... It was a fun goddamn race at the end. And the other thing that was weird, too, is we were the last run group of the day. So when we pulled back off the track, everyone had piled all their cars up and so taken long. Off. They were all gone. It was just this sort of huge,
wow.
empty
Spooky.
Infield.
They don't do like middle school rules where they're like, parents, please stay for the entire performance. Don't leave when your kids is done.
No, we had guys, there were guys that had their ramps and everything set up to their trailer so that when they got off the track, they just like drove it right up, packed it up. But I mean, I don't know. There's something about these dudes. There's like solo dudes. There's a few solo guys. They drive their truck. They drive their trailer. They show up. They unpack everything. They have their tent and their stuff and their coolers and their clocks and their all their tools and all their replacement parts and all. They work on their stuff and then they go race and then they pack it all up and then they just leave again. And I don't know why they're the best guys ever. And there's just something about those dudes because I've really been realizing that so many people are just into the process, that thing we talked about. Like, we want to talk about it. We want to do a survey, and we're going to take a vote, and we're going to ruminate, and then we're going to figure it out, and we're going to put it through a panel, and they're going to review it. We're going to focus group it. And right. These guys are the opposite. They're like, we're going racing. We're packing our shit up. We're getting out there. That's it. The thing runs like clockwork. There's like 8 run groups. They run them. They don't get behind. They run them well. They have all the safety personnel, and everyone is there. So it was good. I had interesting. I saw some horrible parenting at Home Depot as I was preparing to leave.
So you're supposed to see it.
Yeah, you were in the mirror section.
Yeah, the mirror section. That would be super funny if there were a mirror section, but it's still good. Still
good. They have mirrors there, don't they?
They do. I know. I don't think they call it a mirror section, but I like it. I like it. All right.
Like where your head's at.
I like where your head's at. I was kind of wanting to intervene, but I didn't. So, you know how people, I've always said, like, they don't seem to have a proper fear of automobiles. Like, you see people crossing the street just kind of looking down at their phone. Oh, yeah. Or how many times has it happened where you're, like, backing out of a parking lot and there's just someone standing there by the back of your car and you're just watching them and you're backing and they're, like, kind of hanging and you're like, would you get the fuck out of the way? Or even moving forward, like, people just kind of stopped and it's like, just move it over. Go to the sidewalk or get out of the front. I don't know. How do you know I'm not having the world's worst day? Or how do you know I'm not texting too? Or why do you trust me so much? But father, this is like a 40-year-old guy. Had his like 17, 18-year-old son, and he was just, like, standing in the Home Depot parking lot. And I just got out of my car, and there's another guy in a truck. That a, like, six-year-old white dude, and he was, like, backing, he was, like, trying to back his truck up. And the guy and his son were just, like, kind of standing behind the truck. Now, they weren't standing right behind it. They were just sort of in the guy's path as he was trying to pull back. He had a big truck. He was trying to, like, back it out and get out of the parking lot. And they were just kind of standing there, and they're both just kind of watching him. And, like, at some point, the guy rolled down his window, and he's like, hey, fellas, come on, give me a break here. Something, he said something like that. Like, what are we doing? Like, I'm backing. Yeah, I'm trying to back up here. And the dad goes, you got a camera in that car? Like, he's like,
yeah, that's how I know you're in my.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I know. He's like, look at it's your camera. Like, and he's like, go on, get out of here, man. And then he, like, turns to his son. He's like, can you believe this ass? And they're, like, both walking into Home Depot, like, shaking their head, like, screw that guy. And I was like, oh, great, you're poisoning your fucking son. Now we have another asshole out there. He's junior asshole now, but he'll be sheriff asshole one day when he's 40, and then he can pollute his son's brain. Like, there's really only one response, which is, my bad, and hand up and out of the way. And I really realized I was saying when we were walking all through we're running down Cannery Row and Monterey and the whole walk there, the pier and or the wharf and everything. Whenever Sonny and I would cross the street and there'd be like a car waiting at the stop sign or whatever, we'd always jog. I'd jog. And,
yeah, got to do a courtesy jog.
Yeah, and I'd say, look, here's the thing. There's like three messages you can send when you're crossing a street in front of a car. You can jog, which is, I see you, and I'm looking out for you. It's you saying I'm a good citizen, and your time is worth something, and thank you for stopping. Now I shall jog. There is the I'm going to walk slower than I normally walk.
The meander.
There's a message being sent. Mm-hmm. So one's this message, the other's that message.
You're on my time.
And then there's the I don't acknowledge your existence. Like, I'm not even sure where I am, which is its own message in a way, probably scarier than even the slow guy walking. But this guy was basically, I was kind of watching him kind of pollute his son, and his son, who probably could have went, Dad, we were standing behind the guy's truck. And I was like, God damn. He was just like, what an asshole. Like, yeah, he was just like nodding with him. And he was like getting the guy was a little aggressive with the guy who was like going, hey, fellas, come on here. Like, he was being getting aggressive and douchey with that guy. Maybe it's a whole COVID thing. I don't know.
I think he's a guy who has no humility. Like, he had to save face in front of his son.
Yeah, there's no reasonable explanation.
Well, I agree. I've seen a lot of it. I will say this, speaking of the highways and the byways, as you know, I just use these weird little measuring tools, these little snapshots to measure everyone. Like, I know I hate this guy who was pissed off at the guy who was backing off. First things first, it's like you're standing in a parking lot of a busy Home Depot. Expect people to be backing out or coming in or doing whatever that is, number one. Number two, he's saying this because he doesn't want to hit you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're welcome.
There's a context.
Right. There's a context. So I hate this guy, and I don't need to know anything more about this guy. The other thing I was noticing when we were driving through Texas, our freeway signs here used to say click it or ticket, and now they just say safe distance. All it's just they're just saying wash your hands for four months. There is this thing where they could be used to pass along so much information, and the click it or ticket thing is like no duh and no shit, and then wash your hands, it's like, look, people, I think people have gotten the message about washing your hands, but that's it. Our freeway, we have a we have this, I'm trying to think of this, what word am I thinking of? A network. We have a network of these giant digital signs that can reach millions of eyeballs a day in Los Angeles, and we don't say anything on it. And I was driving, we drove from
San Antonio
to
Austin.
To Austin. And every sign, every Texas freeway sign was like a new update on what's going on the next off-ramp and what's going on over here. Like, it was just, I saw 8 different messages, maybe 10, on just on that drive. And they're all just
helpful,
bursting with information, like stuff you could use. And I thought, oh, yeah, I guess Texas gives a shit. Because what we have is, well, we have this network of signs. We should be using it for something, but we don't give a fuck. So what should we put on there? And it's like, well, just put something about safety that no one gives a fuck about. Put click it or ticket on there. Okay. And then we'll just leave it up there, yeah. And then we'll just move on to our next thing. But it's like,
or congratulate yourself and get cute, like, Luke Skywalker uses the Force. You should use the Force, yeah, to make sure your hands are clean. Like, what?
Well, yeah, we don't even do that out here. We don't even. I suspect, like, you see all the cute ones around, and we do the cutie ones, but not that much. And I suspect that half the people on the LA freeway can't speak English. That's my. So you can't get too cute with that stuff.
Not too wordy.
But, we basically said, we have this opportunity to share all this information. We have no interest in it. It's a, you know, I'm sure, a multi-million dollar project, these collected signs everywhere, and it's of no use to anybody in power, even though just simply saying use your signal, that would be enough. I could live with use your signal. Just use your signal. Use your turn signal. I'd be fine with that. But we won't use it. But Texas is nothing but information. And it kind of made me think, I think they're into it a little bit. Like, I think somebody cares or someone is thinking about something. But when we were driving to Austin, Mike August was very much obsessed on getting gas. We had to get gas. We couldn't return the rental car.
Stockpile it.
We got to fill up the rental car because we don't want to get gouged when we return it. And we're like, but this is awesome because all the gas here is $1.79, $1.99. So he's like, we got to fill up before we get to the airport. And we are, you know, it's like eight in the morning. It's kind of early. We're having to drive for 90 minutes, drop the rental car off, blah, blah, blah. And we pull our, you know, it was just a shitty little rental car, nothing exciting. And we pull off the freeway, and it's like $1.99, like just the novelty of filling up with something that starts with a one. So we go, all right, Mike, let's fill it up before we hit the airport. It's like $1.99. So Mike's filling it up. Me and Chris are sitting in the car, and he goes, huh, $1.99. This is $2.25 a gallon. I said, what do you mean $2.25? The sign says $1.99. And he's like, yeah, well, this is $2.25. And we go, why is it $2.25 if it says $1.99? $1.99 is for 87 octane. Mike had chose to fill up the rental car with the 89 mid-grade stuff.
You want to treat it well?
What's he trying to prove?
I don't know. His man's obsessed with money and gas, and he chose the intermediate grade to fill up the rental car, which was we didn't rent a Corvette. It was a shitbox that runs off 87 octane, and then drive it 4 miles and drop it off. As if, I don't know, the chick at Alamo was going to put her finger down the fuel pipe, yeah, like lick it like that. Yeah, like the drug.
It's pure, like in Goodfellas.
Yeah, I don't know. This tastes a lot like 87 octane to me. I don't know. What was his explanation?
Why
was he angry at the gas pump?
Yeah.
He was like, what? $2.25? Yeah. This is bullshit.
Yeah, he comes back into the car while it's filling, complaining. Oh, I can't believe it's $2.25 here. Like, what are you talking? And then Adam just responds, this is the sign of an insane person.
Yes. He's also one of these guys, and I want to tell all you guys, please don't do this. People do the manufacturer says I can put 87 in, but I'm going with the 89 because I love my car, or I want it to last, or I want to be better to it. It's a complete falsehood. Just put in what it requires. If it doesn't say it needs the good stuff or the expensive stuff, then just put in the cheap stuff. That's it. I think it's funny. People look at the car like their body. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where they go, I'll pay a little extra for the organic or the free range chicken or whatever it is. That's fine. But that math doesn't apply to your car. And I think people think it does.
Yeah, you would think it does until somebody tells you otherwise.
Right. So, well, thank you. He's been told. Although he's not going to do it in his car. He's still going to put the good stuff in his
rental,
car.
Though.
In a rental, everyone.
Like, did he stop and have it washed, too?
No. I wanted to read you guys. I want to hear about what you guys did during the break. I was watching The Love Boat, as I'm apt to do during the break. And I saw Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin's laughing. It was a huge comedy show, spawned lots of stars and spinoffs and things like that. Yeah, a lot of those people were all there. And I started to look at it, and I was like, Rowan and Martin, Dan Rowan. I was like, it was Rowan and Martin's laughing. And I always kind of remember Dan Rowan was the guy who's like smoking a pipe. He's kind of like a Hugh Hefner type character. And there was this kind of setting up comedy acts and being kind of the straight man. I don't remember him doing stand up or bits. I don't remember seeing him before or after this, but Rowan and Martin were partners. And this was a massive show in the late 60s, early 70s, a real cultural kind of phenomenon.
That's the one Nixon appeared on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sock It to Me.
Yeah, they get all this. They kind of do like, here come the judge and Sock It to Me and all this kind of stuff. They coined all these phrases. And then they'd get a lot of Henry Kissinger types and Nixons and all different types of people who wouldn't normally pop up in those places. And I thought to myself, wonder what Dan Rowan, who was that guy? Where did he come from? I don't remember him as a stand-up, and I don't remember him as a comedy actor. I'm trying to figure out where he came from of Rowan and Martin's laugh-in. So I looked up Dan Rowan, and his story is what, Dawson?
He was born in 1922 on a carnival train in Oklahoma. His original name was Daniel Hale David. Toured with his parents, who performed a singing and dancing act with the carnival. At age 11, his parents died. He spent 4 years at a home in Colorado. After high school, he hitchhiked to Los Angeles, found a job in the mailroom at Paramount, integrated himself quickly with the studio head, and a year later became Paramount's youngest staff writer. Then World War II happened. He served as a fighter pilot in the 8th Fighter Squadron, for the United States Army Air Forces. He flew a P-40N Warhawk, in which he shot down two Japanese aircraft before he was downed by another in another P-40 and was seriously wounded over New Guinea. His military decorations include the Distinguished Flying Cross, the Oak Leaf Cluster, the Air Medal, and the Purple Heart.
Guy's born on a carnival train. Ends up in Pueblo, Colorado. Made me think that Pueblo, Colorado is where, when I was a kid, and they wanted you to send away for a brochure from the government. Everything the government's like, send to Pueblo, Colorado for more information. It makes you wonder if there wasn't a big orphanage or something in Pueblo, Colorado, where he then was raised. And then he hitchhiked. By the way, in the 30s to 40s. I mean, you know cars, the average a car couldn't make it 11 miles without overheating back then. But anyway, then he goes flying these huge warplanes in World War II. Then what?
Then he's discharged from the Army. He teams up with Dick Martin, starts a comedy nightclub act. They appeared on television, but it wasn't until the critical success of A Summer Special in 1967 that they found fame on Laugh-In, Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. And then it says here, very important, that he also appeared as an actor in a two-part 1987 episode of the TV series The Love Boat, playing the part of Alan Danver, husband of Barbara Danver, played by Juliette Mills.
He also split his time at the end. I think there's a little thing where it's like he split his time between here and where, Dawson? It's on there toward the bottom, I think.
Between his residence in Florida and his barge in the canals of France.
He spent his time between Florida and a barge in France. Jesus Christ. I mean, what a fucking resume.
Yeah.
And you think about it, you just couldn't do that today. First things first, flying fighter planes in World War II. Those things were, if you ever get up on a fighter plane, like a World War II fighter plane, they're big. They're big and they're scary. And there was no computer, anything. Everything was mechanical, just wires and pulleys. You know, you wanted to fly that plane, you were pulling. There was a wire that went to the yoke, and the yoke went around a pulley, and it moved those ailerons around. Those things are big mechanical behemoths. And you're getting shot down over New Guinea, and you're shooting down Japanese Zeros, jeez, and you're hitchhiking, you know, halfway across the country, and you got your then you start a club act after that, and you're orphaned. Both parents die when you're 11. They're in a carnival.
Dude's got range.
I just don't think you'll be able to, you know, there's going to be plenty of this guy was born poor and now he's rich. Like, there's going to be plenty of that.
This takes a detour.
But not this kind of crazy range, right? No.
And now you smash cut to people rioting and freaking out because they don't want to put a kerchief over their face and they already watched everything on Netflix.
Oh, God, I know. I mean, these guys had real lives that were just filled with danger, but also like intrigue and just this whole, it just seems such a full. Now, the problem is when you want to live this kind of life, you can go to, you know, fight in the Pacific Theater and just never come home. That's kind of the problem. And then you'll never have, you never do laugh at. Right. Yeah, that's the risk. But what a goddamn life that guy had.
You had me at born on a carnival train.
Oh, I am always so delighted when I'm taking my drunken wiki walk, when I'm like, I'm going to look into this chick who played Isaac's girlfriend on Love Boat. Then you start digging into these people. First thing is like, are they alive or are they dead? Some of these people didn't make it 5 years after they taped that episode of Loveline. Right. And then other people, it's like, he's 91. He lives in Wisconsin. Around. Yeah. Is he? Oh, he passed pretty young. But
he died of lymphoma in 87.
But Dick, another good reason why you should live your life, people, or why he should live his life. Yes.
I go walking after Love Boat. Mm-hmm. I'm walking. We got to get that going.
All right, let's see. Rowan died at age 65, but is
wait, Dick 65? Martin? Dick Martin was alive until 2008.
Yeah, 86. Also makes you realize, like, you know, his partner died, and he saw another, you know, 25 years of life after Rowan died. All right, Max Pat, I don't have any spots here, so I'm going to announce we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and then all right, I got a spot. Bruce, that's what I wanted to say. Most electric toothbrushes just glorified manual brushes with huge price tags and clunky charging stations. I must tell you, I've been using the bejesus out of my Bruce. That's Bruush. I was here doing all my unpacking and organizing and cleaning, and I stumbled upon Bruce, and I didn't even know their sponsor. I just saw this thing, and I pulled it out, and I was like, oh, this thing looks good. It's much better than the electric toothbrushes you guys are used to. And I brought it with me to Monterey, which is it made the traveling squad. They have refill plans. They'll send you replacement heads every 6 months. And this thing works. I mean, it is not your dad's electric toothbrush. It's state-of-the-art technology. 6 cleaning modes, and they have a smart timer. Lets you know when to switch sides. Stops, goes on and off, lets you know. They have 4-week battery life, USB-powered charging station, sleek carrying case for traveling. Free returns within 90 days, plus free shipping, and a 2-year warranty. This is the real deal, right, Dawson?
Get 15% off your Bruush kit when you use promo code Adam at Bruush.com. That's Bruush.com. Promo code Adam.
All right, we'll take a quick break, come back, hear what these guys did over the break right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Adam, this is Aaron from the Bay Area. I was just remembering your cheerleader song from Loveline back in the day. Here we come a truckin' in. I'm going to go ahead and let you finish. Take it easy.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Bet you wonder where we been. Here we come a truckin' in. Bet you wonder where we been. We're the team that can't be beat. Because we're funky on our feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I learned. That was a Powder Puff cheerleader. We took it very seriously.
Why is being funky on your feet mean you can't be beat? I know plenty of people and teams who are funky on their feet. They get beat regularly.
Most of these, cheers that I remember all through Pop Warner and stuff, you know, just hearing the cheer, there's like go bananas and then spell bananas and stuff like that. Didn't have a lot to do with strategy or winning.
No, there was a cheer from middle school that we did that was just T-R-U. T-R-U-C-K, keep on trucking all the way.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a rhyme or a reason. I do like the we got the spirit. Yes, we do. We got the spirit. How about you one where you point at the other side? Because everyone gets to participate in that. All right. So, Gina, what'd you do during the break?
Well, you know, I was here. I still had my my nightly shift over at KFI, so I didn't go anywhere per se. But it came at the perfect time. It was beshert, as my people say, because I haven't seen my dad in almost 5 months because of the lockdowns at the hospitals and nursing homes and all this stuff. And as you know, he got very sick. So it just so happened that last week he had a neurology appointment and an ENT appointment, and I got to go to both of them.
Oh, fun.
So I saw him 2 days in a row for the first time in almost 5 months, which was like, I kept telling him, I was like, I feel like I won the lottery. I won the lottery. I get to see you 2 days in a row. So that was phenomenal. That was worth every penny. But really chilled and just went to work. Did a little stuff with the family. We took the child to Home Depot, which for some reason he calls the battery store. That must be
It's the mirror store, Gina.
Yeah. He must have seen like a stand of batteries right when he walked in, and that's what's in his head.
My
now,
maid knows it is a chapstick store, but
that makes sense. And we got him. We got some bamboo for the front because, as you know, I live in a rough and tumble neighborhood, and so we got something for the fence so he can't see in quite as easily, and got him some flowers. So we planted some sunflower seeds and did a little gardening with him, which was a lot of fun.
Sorry, but you reminded me of something that's in my phone that Dawson's going to go nuts for, which is more my dad playing the trumpet. You're talking about your dad. He's now telling me his $4,000 trumpet's no good.
Oh,
there's something wrong with it. And I kept trying to listen. I kept trying to listen to it. Also, I had a sad whatever. He said, like, what are you up to? And I said, I'm going to Pebble Beach. I'm going to Laguna Seca to do a race. And he's like, are the top racers from the circuit going to be there? And I was like, Dad, I'm not a professional race car driver. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm not a professional race car driver.
They can't stop. Is he?
You know what I said to him? You know, it's so sad. He's 89. I just went, he went, well, what, you know, what is it or whatever? And I just said, Dad, it's just not worth it. Like, you don't have a base that I could explain. He doesn't know barely knows what a car is. Like, I couldn't say to him, I'm driving my 510 Datsun. He wouldn't picture, he wouldn't know. Yeah. Like,
you know how you can drive a car? You can drive fast. You can drive really fast.
We get together, we drive fast together.
It's like you were trying to teach people math, but they didn't know the difference between a 2 and a 5. Mm-hmm. And it's like at a certain point you go, you need a base so we can discuss this. But if you don't have a base of knowledge or of understanding, or you don't know anything, then just fuck it. And I remember just telling Dad, you don't have a base, so we can't discuss what I'm doing. And he was like, okay, good. Like, bullet dodge. Sorry, go ahead, Gina.
So, you know, that was pretty much the week. It's a lot of dad stuff. And then by Saturday, my head was about to explode. I said, I got to get the fuck out of here and I don't care where we go. So I woke up just kind of feeling sorry for myself and was very vocal about that. I was like, I'm just feeling sorry for myself. I just stayed in bed. And to my fiance's credit, he was like, fuck that, because I don't want to hear about this for another week. We are going. We are getting up. We're doing whatever you want. So I said, let's just go. Let's just drive. I don't care where. So we got in the car.
The kids at home. Look at the window.
No kid. And I said, I want to drive through like the West Valley, see me things that I don't normally see. So we took this gorgeous drive, like 118 and a 23. And we have pictures. I literally, like a dog, sat with both arms and my head out the window.
Tongue wagging.
Literally. For like 45 minutes, I was in heaven just driving this warm breeze. We drove through Malibu, stopped and he ran up the sand, that giant sand hill that people do. There was lots of kids doing sand sledding, which was kind of cute. He ran and I sat at the bottom.
Oh yeah, sand sledding. That sounds
and
cool.
That was cool. I wish we would have known. I would have brought something. And I said, let's keep going. So, Zuma, Point Doom. We ended up in Ventura. Mm-hmm. And we're like, let's just walk around, see what's going on up there. Well, it reminded me of our time in Temecula, which is everyone's kind of in fuck it mode. But it was interesting. I love a street party, a street festival, anything that looks like that. And now everything looks like that because everything's a walk street. So we got up there and it was crowded on Main Street or whatever the main street is in Ventura, lines and just no social distancing of any kind. But we found a restaurant that didn't have a lot of people, which I guess we should have known the food wasn't going to be awesome. But we said, let's not like rub elbows, but I want to go walk around. This is exciting. This is the first time I've been outside in 4 months, essentially, to do anything. So we walked around up there and had a lovely drive back, which was great. Came home, started our sixth run of Breaking Bad. I think we're on season three now. Yesterday, or I guess Sunday, we did something that, Adam, I don't know if you're going to love us or hate us for this, probably both. Mm. We decided it would be really fun to run errands together because that would make it more fun. Mm. So my dad, I don't like running other people's errands, but he was willing to run mine. So he bought my dad the MLB baseball package. So we ran up to where my dad is recovering and set that up for him. Although we can't see him, they just passed us the iPad. And then we went ran some errands.
Be careful that if that thing automatically renews every season, it's one of those things.
Thank you.
And when Danny Two Sheets was staying at my party house in Sherman Oaks, he signed himself up for the MLB package and then never unsigned himself. And not only the only thing I hate more than baseball is paying later for baseball.
Yeah.
And we're unlimited baseball.
We got 4 days into the next season and I was like, hey, I want to go ahead and cancel this. And they're like, well, you have to pay for the whole season because it's just science, or is it just they want your money and fuck you. So
thank you.
Just be careful to keep an eye on that. It'll just keep going forever.
Well, speaking of that, you know how everything feels a little bit like the beginning of they're setting the scene for some sort of sci-fi apocalyptic movie. Mm-hmm. Well, I should have recorded it. I didn't. I'll just tell you really fast. I found the perfect opening for the sci-fi movie that we're all in. So he turns on the MLB here and he's excited because he can watch the Twins and they're just doing a little, filibuster chatter, the announcers, and they say the thing that would start any sci-fi movie just to set the scene where we're at. Oh, and I'm picking a team because I don't remember who it was, but off to a great start this season. Of course, 8 players from the Cardinals came down with the virus, so they won't be playing. But so far, looking like it's going to be a great season. I was ugh, that just sent shivers. Eerie. Like saying it so casually, oh, they caught the virus, so they're out. So that kind of freaked me out. But then we went to Philly's Best, got ourselves a couple of Philly bowls, sat and had a picnic. I love Philly cheesesteaks. So we had we did the bowls and dropped off a few more boxes for the children's hospital. Came home. I was pretty tired and I like to unwind by cooking. So I think we have a picture. Last night I decided, just for my own therapy, to make a nice seared salmon with a side of shrimp scampi and a little salad.
We're looking at it.
The lemon garlic butter sauce.
Good, man.
Looking good.
So, and I've got to tell
you. Surf and surf. Yeah, shrimp on the side.
I called it our night at sea. And I only know how to sear salmon. This is very sad. I only know because of when I was doing Home Chef. They taught me on the cards how to sear salmon perfectly. So now I'm so excited about it. I always have to post a picture.
It's
so it was
beautiful.
A real casual. Thank you. It's a real casual week. I got to see my dad and kind of catch up on some things. And that was it.
Dawson, sorry. I was thinking of you when I was recording my dad. He was explaining to me that his trumpet is no good.
Again.
Yeah. And he keeps telling me when he's like playing the high note, that I can hear that it sounds bad, but I couldn't hear that it was bad. But then I had no, then I was kind of left in this position where I have to explain that maybe it was him not being able to play.
It could be easier.
Not the trumpet.
Well, operator error.
I'm really hoping that he offered us a different song this time, at least.
He was just
a different set of notes.
He was just hitting notes, but I think it'll work. It'll work for you.
Let's see.
All right, so.
I'm not sure what. Oh, there it is.
That little drummer boy?
Try it again. A
little vibrato.
Taps.
Taps.
Can't hear it. It sounds pretty clear.
Star Trek.
That's 2001.
Yes, yes.
Right. That's right. That's Wagner. That one sounded good.
But now, is there somewhere... He wants me to get his trumpet fixed.
It just sounds higher.
But I don't know what it's broken on it. It's just...
All right.
So I don't know if there's something psychological going on here, but it's like 3 years of him wanting a trumpet, then me getting him a $2,000 trumpet, and it's not good enough. Then he takes that back. Actually, I take that back, and then he gets himself a $3,500 trumpet. And now there's something wrong with this trumpet, and I need to get it fixed for him somehow. He's, but no place is open, and yeah. I don't know how to fix it. Yes.
He's a process guy.
He can explain it to you, but you have no base. No base of knowledge
no
about
base.
Trumpets.
Yeah, you're right. He threw it right back in my face. And no, you're right. He's a process guy. He wants to it's talk about this trumpet forever.
The ultimate process guy. His whole life has been a process.
No, it's true. It's a way to avoid participating and in life. And then all the fucking life has hassles and life has good times. And oftentimes the more hassles you deal with, the more good times you get to have, you know, at some point in life.
Yeah.
But if you don't really want to deal with the hassles, and especially if everything falls under the heading of hassle, there's a lot of people that are like, going out and riding horses falls under the heading of hassle for like a lot of people, or going to the ocean and riding waves on a boogie board falls like, oh, you got to find a place to park. And then you get all the sand in your crotch,
sure.
You
traffic.
Know, and there's traffic. And it's, so if you are one of these people who can turn almost any opportunity into a hassle, then you don't really leave the house, but you cannot, nobody ever says, what do? I just sit on my ass and I really do nothing. They go like, I'm involved with X, Y, and Z. But the idea is they have to sort of keep this illusion of participation in a process going.
Right.
Because otherwise, they're going to have to just sort of realize the reality of them not really living or participating or doing anything. These are the people who are always telling you, like, oh, I had to get up, and then I had to go to the post office, and of course there was a line, so I had to wait. You know, like they just
so like everybody else.
It's called life. It's just like every. You stop turning this into rock soup, as I say often. Yes, Brian.
We talk about that vis-a-vis Christmas a lot, right? With the real Christmas tree versus the fake Christmas right. tree, or putting up the lights or wrapping. Yes, it's a huge effort and it's a pain in the ass, but it's all building towards something. It's worth it on, you know, Christmas Day or whatever it is.
The every guy at the track this last weekend, nobody gets paid. Nobody gets a trophy. Nobody gets anything. And they have to pay $700 to enter this race and then come down there with all their fuel, yep. which is, you know, their fuel is $30 a gallon. Mike says he can get it for $35. But I said, I'll keep mine at 30. Says he knows a guy in Texas. So everything's expensive. The tires are expensive. Everything's expensive. One big, huge effort in order to do something that would be considered living your life. Yeah. So I think my dad is interested in the process. And I guess he's just trying to turn this trumpet into something. So now part two is I have to go figure out who to take this trumpet to. Which I asked
you, how do you explain what the problem is when you don't hear it?
I had a funny conversation with him, too. All my conversations with my family are super condescending. But he said, I'll handle it. Just give me the trumpet. I'll handle it. And he said, do you have a guy for this? And I go, everyone's my guy, Dad, because I get shit done. Like, when you get stuff done, you don't have a trumpet guy. You just take care of business. You have relationships. You know people and know people. You go, who's the guy? Who? Well, Dawson and Chris, they're musicians. They're going to know someone. I would go to them. If something broke on the trumpet, I would go to Sean in the other shop. Like, I don't have a guy. I have a whole bunch. I have a brain and relationships. I have a network. Right. I can figure this shit out. Chris, does that sound like the trumpet was broken or... I couldn't tell. My head was swimming.
I couldn't tell either, to be honest.
All right. So
I didn't hear anything wrong with the trumpet.
I didn't hear anything.
Maybe the pair of lips attached to it.
Possibly. It didn't come with lips. So now we're in, I don't know, stage 28 or round 14 of the trumpet or whatever. It's an ongoing.
Thing. Well, like you say in I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, it's kind of why your mother stayed in junior college for so many years. She never had to commit to actually doing something.
The process, yeah.
Oh, the reason I hate junior college is because of my mom. She hid under the shroud, under the awning of junior college for 18 years because we would go, what are you up to? I'm going to school. Oh, you're back at school. And everyone would applaud, and then she'd get left alone.
And your dad says, well, I'm trying to fix this trumpet.
I'm troubleshooting a flugelhorn.
Damn trumpet.
You're wrestling with a damn trumpet.
Hey, real quick, can I tell you one thing that I forgot? I got good shamed last night, and it really, really helped a lot. We got home from all this Michigas, and I was in the shower. And we have separate bathrooms because I need my own bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Andy comes in to ask me something. And I poke my head out and he looks at me and goes, Jesus Christ. Because it's just stuff everywhere and hair stuff. Just a wreck. Cords and hair dryers. And I was like, what? He's like, kind of pointed everything and walked out. And I was like, oh, fuck. He's right. Because you don't really see it. You do become blind to it until somebody else sees it. And then you're kind of embarrassed. So he got on the phone with a friend for about an hour. And he hears noises and chainsaws and barnyard animals and stuff. All this stuff coming from the bathroom. By the time he gets off the phone, I go, come here, take a look. And he goes, was this because of me? Oh, God, I feel like such an asshole. I was like, no, thank you. I needed to hear it. I needed to hear it from someone. Or otherwise, I literally was blind to it until somebody else said, Jesus Christ. Straight talk. I got a nice bathroom cleaning.
Gina, you, my dear, are a winner. And I'll tell you why. Because I was really just thinking about this the other day. There's just two camps in the world. There's the people, you're in one camp or the other. I was thinking about this the other day. Like you can come in and say to someone, hey, this looks bad, or hey, you got to do this or that. And there's one group that gets angry. There's just one group that's like, oh, your bathroom is, you know, they just get angry. And then there's another group that has to internalize. They're just like, oh, does it look that bad? I'm embarrassed. I hope we never have this conversation again. You must look at me in a slightly more negative way now. I would like to repair that. And you just go do it. But there's a large group of people just immediately gets angry with any of that kind of input. It drives me insane. I don't know why there's so fucking many of those people where you just go, your car's a mess. You should clean it or something. I go, your fucking car's a, like, why not just do it? It's a weird, I get it. It's an adolescent thing, but are we just taking that right to the grave? Like, why are there so many of these people?
That's a good question, but I want to be very intellectually honest here. Don't think I sent him a muffin basket as a thank you. At first I was like, well, fuck you. You have your own bath. And I was like, nope. He's right. So my instinct was like, wait, go deal with your own bathroom. And then I was like, I looked around, but I saw it with fresh eyes. And I was like, oh, this is horrible. So it was a little bit of both. I'm not perfect, but it got done.
Let me hit liquid IV, by the way. Dehydration occurs daily, by the way, in many people. It says 3 out of 4 people. I got to tell you, it was hot down on that racetrack, and I brought my liquid IV, and I shook it up in my water bottle, and I was chugging it before I got in the car because sweat right through my fire suit over there. So I brought this. I brought the liquid IV for getting in the car, and then I also bought it for before I went to bed. I was getting into the car and getting into bed because getting in the car during the day, I was sweating my ass off. And at night, a couple of cocktails out at the steakhouse, and want to get a little liquid IV in me before I put my head down on the pillow. This stuff is good. It comes as a little, I don't know, little tube pouches. It's easy to travel with. I just throw a few into my toiletry bag. 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, as much potassium as a banana. That's the good stuff for the hangover. It is Liquid IV, right, Dawson?
Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco and Target, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Adam at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code Adam at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com. Promo code Adam.
Let's see. So Rob's on hold. Sorry, Brian. We'll get a recap with you on your vacation first thing tomorrow.
Nobody knows where Brian was.
I got a spiritual IV, speaking to the
IV. I saw some intriguing pictures, and we'll tease it for tomorrow. But
yeah, you guys are going to dig it.
I'm curious what you did. Also, I've been meaning to play a clip from Dawson's new audiobook, Up on Game, which is out when, Dawson?
It's out now, Up on Game, When I Ruled the World.
And give us a little synopsis.
It's the second book. The first book was about Richard robbing banks and then going to jail. This next book takes place 4 years into his 8-year sentence when he gets asked to be the shot caller on the yard. And the guy has to walk a major tightrope in prison. And it's gnarly. It's like, you know, those prison documentaries like Lock Up and stuff. That's nothing. That's told from the guard's perspective. This is some serious prison stuff. And I chose a clip to play for you that's a little callback to something we spoke of earlier on the Adam Carolla Show. I think you'll dig this. This is right at the beginning of the book when Richard gets thrown into solitary.
I was transferred to the main solitary building, Building 7. After about a week. That's where I needed to do all that explaining. Once Chino and I hit the cell in Upper B section and were uncuffed through the slot in our door, a homie hollered out on the tier through a crack of his cell from a few cells down. Dispensa on the tira, cell 225, which translates from broken English into full-on English as excuse me on the tier, cell 225. Ah, an inquiry was coming. I responded with, dispensa on the tira, si, and awaited a response. Are you active? He asked. He was making sure me and my cellie were not in protective custody, or to be more specific, ensure we hadn't placed ourselves in ad seg for having run to the guards after we got ourselves into some shit. Simone, homie, we're both active, I said. I was basically informing him, whoever that was, that we were involuntarily detained in ad seg, and we would be a part of the homies program versus doing our own thing. I'm going to shoot you my line in a minute. Pull it in when you see it in front of your pad. He was telling me that he was about to slide a weight made from the sole of a fake-ass shoe known as the Jap Flap. You're going to have to read my first book to get a better rundown on what the Jap Flap is. The reason being, I'm writing this in 2020, and I don't know how many times I can get away with saying the politically insensitive name of Jap Flap. But that's what they called him. I've literally never heard them called anything else. The weight would have a piece of twine tied to it through a small hole at the lighter end of the sole. The twine was made from the elastic fibers of boxer shorts. You could have up to as much line as you can conceal in a cell search, basically. I began to make some line out of thin strips of sheets, since I'd just gotten there, and then made a makeshift weight out of the envelope my solitary paperwork was being contained in, on my locker. I removed my solitary lockup order, and left the filler papers in the envelope, and then poked a hole through the envelope with a small pencil, and then threaded the sheet strip through, tying it. The homie shot his line down the tier with his weight bouncing off the curb of the top tier and ricocheting into my cell. "This motherfucker's been back here a minute with aim like that," I remember thinking.
It gets pretty hairy as we go on. Mark Garriga says that he's often asked why he still does criminal defense. My response is that the stories are the best. Richard Stanley has proved that adage true 10 times over. It's a fascinating story told in a masterful fashion that is riveting and entertaining. Adam Carolla says...
Whatever Matt wrote.
Jack flaps. It takes a lot of balls and or stupidity to rob a bank, but it takes real grit to make it through prison and come out the other side with a better outlook on life and without a face tattoo. Richard Stanley is by far one of the most fascinating people I've interviewed. You'll love this book. Pick it up. Up on Game, When I Ruled the World, available wherever you get audiobooks. And tonight at 10 p.m. on Vice TV, they did a series called How to Rob a Bank. And they're debuting Richard's episode tonight on Vice TV, 10 p.m., wow. So check it out.
Nice.
Well, thank you, Dawson. Rob Schneider.
Jap flaps.
Is on hold. That's what they call them. And they also called them Zoris, which is something we're trying to figure out. Flip-flops were Zoris and or Jap flaps when I was a kid. Don't know where the origins of Zoris.
Never heard that. We call them thongs.
Yeah, because they go between the, yeah.
These were more like the ninja shoes.
Oh, these were the ninja shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, right, just with the flap over the top. Shower shoes.
I'm thinking Zoris is an Jap East flaps. Coast thing.
Zoris is an East Coast thing, yeah. Okay. My relatives from Philadelphia, Pat and Vince Bruno, would be like, "I'm wearing my Zoris." And that's an East Coast thing. Like, I don't know, like they have horseshoe crabs over there and we don't. JB Weld, quick 15 seconds at JB Weld here, proud sponsor of the Adam Carolla Show, epoxy adhesive brand used by both DIYers and pros as well, and trusted for over 50 years. Available at jbweld.com. Rob Schneider's on hold. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Rob and a couple of phone calls right after this.